Enjoy yourself for some spoken word entertainment here on CITR 101.9 FM.
CITR and Disorders Shindig is back for the 34th year and is hosted at Hastings Mill Brewing Company, formerly known as Pat's Pub, every Tuesday night.
We've curated a spicy roster of local musicians, and there are 27 bands, 27 winners, but someone has to take home the Shindig Windig crown from last year's champ, Little Sprout.
Come watch bands jam out, have fun, and battle it out for some rad prizes provided by our sponsors.
Sierra Fox Postering,
Nimbus Recording, Cannery Brewery,
Pandora's Box,
Vader Master Studios, Rain City Recorders,
Mint Records,
Music Waste, Live from Thunderbird Radio Hell,
Sixth Cent Press,
Blue Light Studios, Hastings Mill Brewery,
Print Print.
Come out to Pat's Pub November 14th to see Late Night with Andy Resto featuring Sexy Merlin, Last Forest, and Pleasure Blimps.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Crap.
Beautiful from any point of view, worth more from every point of value.
Crap.
1960.
Muy crapola.
Hey, I want to thank you for playing. You lost, but you were a good sport, and we'll see you later. Thank you very
Ugh,
much.
Real crap. Please, if I wanted reality, I wouldn't be drinking this. Still, any reason to toast, right? Big Al.
I know you're in there. Open the door. Don't make me ask you again.
Oh! Jeez! Oh! Ooh, I love what you've done with the place, Princess. Answer me when I'm talking to you. A little jumpy, ain't you? Well, you should be jumpy. You owe me a lot of money, Princess. That's not a healthy position to be in.
I understand, Mr. Sofrandini. Look, I've got 300 that I've been putting aside just for you.
Which wouldn't even begin to cover the interest, let alone the balance. Besides, how'd you come up with that money, huh?
Well,
uh-oh. So, what would DeLuca do to you if he knew you was holding out on him, huh? He's got a bad temper, that one. Not at all understanding like me. Maybe I should call him.
Please, Mr. Sofrandini, please don't call him.
All right. You do something for me, and I won't. I'll even give you another grace period on what you owe. And maybe I won't stop by again for a while. You know, you'd like that, wouldn't you?
I...
Unless you'd miss me.
Yes.
Oh. So I should pay you a visit more often, huh? Answer me.
Anything you say, Mr. Sofrendini.
Right answer. So you're gonna do something for me?
Okay.
Don't be stupid. I can have that anytime I want.
But...
Shut up and listen. There's this old guy named Turk Bowman. Low-rent bookie on the east side. You know... You two got something in common. You're both in a me for some big bucks. Only Turk, he can't lay on his back to buy himself time like you do. So, tonight, his time's up.
I don't understand.
You're gonna take this 38, and you're gonna ice Bowman for me. What's up, kitten? Cat got your tongue?
Mr. Sofrendini, I can't. I'm no killer.
No. You're a two-bit whore who owes me 5 G's. A two-bit whore who'd better do like I tell her.
But I've never even fired a gun before.
So? You learn.
But, Mr. Sofrendini...
Oh, what was I thinking? Can't mess up that pretty face of yours. Come here. That's better. Got anything else to say? Didn't think so. So Bowman is in a crummy little one room, a bit like this. 83 East 75th. You go there tonight after 1, and you get it done. You do Bowman. Or I... Do you? Capiche? Answer me.
Yes, Mr. Sofrendini.
Now, when you get the job done, drop the piece in the river, understand?
Yes, Mr. Sofrendini.
And I'll be back later. One way or another.
I'll get caught for sure.
Of course you will, dummy. That's the whole point. My torpedoes are all too good to waste on a penny ante job like this. But you, who's gonna care when you get picked up, huh? Oh, but who knows? Maybe you'll get away with it. And if you do... I'm a man of my word. You know what? Then again, someone might just give the cops an anonymous tip. Who knows?
Yeah?
Darla? Darla Sobieski?
There's no Darla Sobieski here. The name's Princess.
No, I recognize you anywhere. It's you, Darla. I know it's you.
Look, I told you, there's no Darla here. And anyway, I'm not working tonight. Sorry, mister.
Please, I'm not here for that. I just want to talk to you, that's all.
I'm sorry, but I'm not in a talkative mood. Please get your foot out of the door.
Just 5 minutes, that's all I ask.
I asked you to get your foot out of the door. Now please leave me alone.
I'll pay you a fin for 5 minutes.
A fin? How do I know this isn't some kind of trick?
Do I look dangerous?
Mister, the first thing I learned in this line of work is that every man is dangerous.
I'm sorry.
For what?
That you had to learn that lesson?
Don't be. It's good that I found out early. My dad took off when I was barely old enough to walk, and every man I've met since has done nothing but reinforce that opinion.
He didn't deserve a daughter like you.
Nobody deserves a daughter like me.
That's not how I meant it.
It's okay. We're probably both right. Look, you want to talk, we'll talk. But I've got a bottle close at hand, and I'll bust you over the head if I have to. Now, keep your fiver. Doubt that I'm going to be around to spend it anyway.
That's something we both have in common.
No kidding.
No kidding.
You think something's going to happen to you, mister?
I know it is.
How do you know that?
It's all over the streets that I'm going to be gunned down like a dog tonight.
Mister, we all have troubles.
Yeah, only mine are right in front of me.
Aren't they always?
No, I mean literally right in front of me.
What does that mean?
What it means is that the killer who's supposed to gun me down is you.
What? Wait, you're Turk Bowman?
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Like I said, it's all over the street. Guess Sefradini wants to make sure that you're the one who gets fingered when I turn up dead.
But why?
Well, from what I hear, you owe him near as much as I do. So I figured he just wants us both gone. And you know what a sick SOB he is. Always got it all worked out. You kill me, then you get the chair. Or you don't kill me, so he does us both and makes it look like we got each other. Or I'll kill you.
You'll never get the chance. I'll shoot you down right here.
Relax. Even if I was packing, I couldn't do that because I know something that Sefradini doesn't.
Yeah? Of course you do. You're such a smart guy that you have a call girl gunning for you.
You don't know the half of it.
Meaning what?
Because your dad, the louse who ditched you and your mom when you were just a little girl. That was me.
Now I've heard everything.
It's true, Darla.
Stop calling me that.
It's your name.
No, it's not. Not for a long, long time.
But it was once.
Oh, and you knowing that is supposed to convince me?
You were named after your aunt, your mother's sister.
So? You could have found that out in public records. Doesn't prove a thing.
Okay. Then what about this?
Hold it, mister! Don't go reaching into your pocket unless you want me to pull this trigger.
Look, I'm just getting a photograph out. I'll go real slow.
Okay. Real slow.
There, see? Just an old photo. Look.
So? Just some girl in the snow.
Not just some girl. That little kid in the snowsuit. That's you.
I don't remember that.
I'm not surprised. You couldn't have been more than two.
At all.
Look at her. Look close. Don't you recognize yourself?
Mister, I don't even recognize myself in the mirror anymore.
The eyes. Look at the eyes, Darla.
Look, I don't know what you're expecting me to see, but I'm not seeing it. And even if I did buy any of this malarkey, what do you want me to say? My father abandoned me and my mom. If I really thought you were him, I'd pull this trigger right now.
Do you really hate me that much?
You're not my father! How many times do we have to go through this?
But for the sake of the argument, what if I was?
Fine. You want to hear it. Then you'll hear it. After he left, you know what happened? My mother worked herself into an early grave trying to take care of us. And when she got too sick to work anymore, it was up to me. And not a lot of jobs for 15-year-olds out there. None that would pay the bills anyway. So I started turning tricks.
15?
Yeah, 15. But save your pity for yourself, pal. Because you're the one staring down the barrel of a gun.
I've got enough for both.
But I don't want it. I don't want anything from you.
Got a lot of anger for someone you don't believe is your father. You don't even know me.
And I'm not going to either. One shot, and this is all over.
But can you do it? Can you kill me in cold blood?
I don't know. But the more you keep telling me that you're my daddy and I'm your little girl in the snow, the more likely it is that I will.
Did you ever stop to think that your father might have left because he was trying to protect you?
Well, he sure did a bang-up job of that.
Maybe he was just a kid himself when you were born. He was already heading down a bad road and didn't want to take you and your mother down with him. So he ran.
Ran like a coward, you mean?
Maybe. Maybe that was part of it. Anyway, but that doesn't mean he didn't love you and your mom. And that he didn't think he was doing the right thing. At the time, anyway.
And you know what difference that makes? None.
No, I guess not.
So why did you come here? I mean, really, why? This whole, I'm your long-lost daddy bit? What did you think was going to happen? Even if I believed a word of it, what's the point?
Because I was hoping to find the solution to this that didn't involve both of us being dead.
Like what? Daddy coming to rescue his little girl?
Like maybe both of us getting out of town while we still can.
And why in the world would I go anywhere with you? If you're lying, then you're a nutcase. And if you're not, then I'd rather be dead than be within 1,000 miles of the man who destroyed my life.
Then go by yourself. But go. You must have a little money socked away.
Yeah? But what would be the point? You know Sofredini. No matter where I run, he'd hunt me down just for the fun of it. And when he caught me...
Then give me the money and I'll go.
What?
Just because you're determined to stay here and let that hood gun you down doesn't mean I am. And I'm flat broke.
Oh, maybe you are my daddy after all. Because you sure have the same lack of guts.
Look, I tried to get you to go, but you don't want to listen. So what good's that money gonna do you?
No good at all. You know, you're right. By all means, go. Save your own neck. Here, take it. $300. Would you like to know what I had to do for that money, Daddy?
No.
No, I guess not. That might hold you up, and we couldn't have that, could we?
Goodbye, Darla.
Get out. Sofredini.
Sofredini? Not Mr. Sofredini? Well, I'm hurt. And when I'm hurt, you get hurt. You should know that by now, but I guess I get to teach you one more lesson. And you, Bowman, planning to run out?
Look, Mr. Sofredini.
Save it!
I've got 300 I can give you right now.
Oh, boy. What a coincidence. She tried to give me 300 earlier. Boy, you must have told her some whopper to get that money, huh?
He told me he was my father.
Your father? Art! Ain't that rich? Ah, and you bought it.
No, I didn't.
Stupid. Of course you did. You gave him the money, didn't you?
Yes.
And look how he repaid you. He was all ready to sell you out just to save his own skin. Trust me, you're better off not having an old man than having one like him.
You're right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, don't take it too hard. You don't have the time. So who wants it first, huh?
You're gonna gun us both down?
Of course. But don't worry. I'll make it look like you shot each other. The story about Princess here being out to shoot you has been making the rounds. When the cops find the two of you here, they'll figure it like that, you know?
Yeah.
And since I need to shoot Daddy here with your gun, I guess it's ladies first. Goodbye, Princess.
No!
No! You're gonna be okay. I'll call an ambulance.
No.
Bullies? Yes. I'd like to report a shooting. Turk Bowman. Yes. He's dead. Some lowlife hood broke into my motel room and tried to shoot me. Mr. Bowman threw himself on the gunman and was killed. But I was able to kill the intruder in turn. Motel Tahiti. Room 213. I understand. Now I'll wait here. Yes. Mr. Bowman was my father. Thank you.
So ends Girl in the Snow by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Courtney Palm was Princess. Mark Silverman was Turk Bowman, and Darren Jacobs was Al Soffredini. I'm your host, Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
I'm John C. Alsadek.
And I'm Dana Perry Hayes. Together, we're Blue Hours Productions, the producers of Suspense. In this series of post-episode segments, we'll explain some of the inner workings of radio's outstanding theater of thrills. So please join us as we go behind Suspense.
In this week's segment, we'll talk about just what's involved in creating an episode of Suspense. The The process consists of 5 steps.
Step 1. We write a script. On Suspense, half the scripts are originals and half are adaptations of classic short stories from the public domain. The two sources present very different challenges for us. Originals are often easier because while we have to come up with all the plotting and dialogue from scratch, we can do so in our own natural style. Adaptations, on the other hand, require us to temper our own style in order to stay true to the source material. The scripting process generally takes 3 to 4 days, and during this time, we work out the casting, drawing from our ever-growing pool of acting talent to see who we feel is just the right voice for each role.
Step 2. We head into the recording studio. Our recording sessions run about 3 hours. The first hour is devoted to walking through the script with the actors, making sure everyone has the right feel for his or her character, as well as for the overall story. From that point, we do 2 or 3 takes of each scene, giving us a certain amount of wiggle room that the original Suspense, which was recorded live, didn't have. Once the session is completed, the raw WAV files are burned onto disk, and we move into the heart of the process.
Step 3. We select the vocal tracks we'd like to use. Normally, we go through each take as a whole and use the best one in order to keep the feel as organic as possible. However, if there are individual lines that sound a bit off, anything from a popped P to an accent on the wrong syllable, we'll swap them out for one of the other takes. We then finalize each scene's dialogue as a single high-quality MP3 file.
Step 4. We lay out the basic vocal tracks scene by scene, layering the sound effects as we go along. Doing it this way allows us to make the finished episode feel as true to life as possible, even to the point where we include background sounds that one might not even notice unless wearing headphones.
Finally, step 5. We add musical transitions and finalize the episode. At this point, we have 6 or 7 MP3 files, one for each completed scene, plus the opening and the credits. So we lay them out, inserting transitional music that we've created ourselves between the scenes. After that, we give it a final listen through to catch anything we may have missed. Then finalize the project as a single MP3 file. And that's it. From a glimmer of an idea to a completed piece of radio drama in 5 steps. Thank you for joining us on Behind Suspense. Until next time, this is Blue Hours Productions wishing you good night
and pleasant dreams.
Hold of some pigskin. This is my shimmering life prize. All I must do is create a diversion. What could distract people who love sports? Sports! 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 Sports!
Do you find sports distracting? Feel the need to chant sports for hours on end? Then come on by the CITR station at the new sub to get involved. We do play-by-play, color commentary, audio production, interviews, and so much more. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
You could come.
Well, given how many articles I've gotten from Max's research, how could I not?
Oh, so you didn't come to see me?
Dear lady, were you not married to one of my best friends, I would worship your beauty all day, every day.
Liar. But a most charming one.
Hey, at least I'm a charming one. You aren't looking as lovely as ever, though, Velda. In fact, even more so, there's almost a glow about you.
Well, if there is, it's because I've never been happier in my life.
That's wonderful. I know it's been a hard past few years. You deserve every bit of happiness you can grab hold of. But what's brought this on, if I might ask?
I know Max is anxious to see you, Fred. We'll talk later, okay?
Okay, we'll talk later. Is he in his laboratory?
Isn't he always?
All right, till later.
Enter. Fred, what is death?
Well, it's good to see you too, Max. Yes, I had a fine drive up from New York. What's that? Oh, Marnie and the kids are great. Thanks for asking.
All right. So I'm a terrible friend. But I have something to show you, and I can't wait another moment.
A potential story?
Not yet. At present, I don't want a word released to the public or to the profession.
Okay, not a word until you're ready. But when you are...
When I am, you'll have the biggest story of your career. Now, come on. Let's get into the examination room. The test subject on the table there. How would you describe him?
About 6 feet. 180 pounds, maybe 25 years of age. Exceptionally good musculature. Would appear to be the very picture of health.
Are you certain of that?
Oh, Max, I'm no doctor.
Oh, I know. But for a layman, you're extremely well-versed in medicine. Now, just tell me what you see.
I just did.
But you didn't mention any of the symptoms of his disease.
Disease? I didn't see signs of anything out of the ordinary.
I don't know how you could have missed them. I mean, why don't you take another look?
All right. What? How could I have missed this?
So he's not the picture of health?
No, on the contrary. The general pallor, the hectic spots of color over the cheekbones, the emaciated wrists, the prominent ribs, the deep depressions around the collarbones, the blood-speckled mucus on his lips... Well, it all points to an advanced stage of chronic tuberculosis.
You're quite sure that it's tuberculosis?
I mean, naturally, I could be wrong. It might be some other disease with the same symptoms, but the symptoms are there unmistakably.
You're absolutely positive.
Of course.
Well, then, take another look.
I don't need to.
Please. Please, Fred. Humor me.
All right, but... What kind of trick is this?
So, you still think it's tuberculosis?
No, I don't.
Well, then what's wrong with him?
There's something fishy here. But if you insist, here's my idea. Well, his wrists are now swollen. The chest has become so unhealthily puffy that the ribs and collarbone are lost to view. The skin now has a bluish tinge. Combined with the labored, wheezy breathing, I'd say heart trouble, perhaps brought on by kidney disease.
Hmm. You're absolutely sure of that?
Well, as sure as I was the first time when I thought it was tuberculosis.
Well, then maybe you should look again.
Look, Max.
Hello.
What the...
Fred, meet John Fearing.
What? There's not a sign of anything wrong with him now.
John, this is Fred Alexander, the writer. We can trust him not to breathe a word about our experiments until we tell him to. Even though I believe that we've succeeded in giving him quite a surprise.
You certainly have.
Mr. Alexander, so what diseases did I do this time?
Tuberculosis and nephritis. John and I have been working together for 6 months now. I would have introduced you sooner, but, well, I must say that I've been a little jealous of John. I haven't introduced him to anyone connected with the profession. I wanted to keep him all to myself until we got a little further along in our experiments.
Understandable. It's astounding. How on earth do you do it?
Well, the control part you can probably figure out for yourself.
Hypnotism?
Mm-hmm.
And those pencil wrappings were cues. Signals for him to carry out instructions given to him in an earlier stage of the trance, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I seem to recall now that the wraps were different in each case. I suppose each combination of wraps was hooked up with a special set of instructions.
Hmm. Exactly. John doesn't respond until he gets the right signal. This system seems to work out better than trying to give him the instructions at the same time that he's supposed to be carrying them out. And besides, it's a lot more dramatic.
I'll say it is. Max, let's get to the important point. How in the world did John fake those symptoms?
You know what somatoform disorder is, yes?
Yes, it's when the mind creates all sorts of tangible symptoms of disease without the disease itself being present.
Mm-hmm, precisely. And that's what John has.
Oh, but the symptoms with somatoform disorders are never so extreme or created with such swiftness. I mean, why, there was even blood in his mucus and the swollen wrists.
The difference is only a matter of degree. You see, John's parents are both highly prone to such disorders, and he has inherited the sensitivity vastly greater than theirs. It was only discovered when his body made the mistake of faking the symptoms of a germ disease. A laboratory test showed that the germs in question weren't present. Eventually, John ended up here. His family lives close by, and Velda had made friends with him. We began working together, and by learning how to harness this astonishing gift of his, John went from a hopeless hypochondriac to the magnificent physical specimen you see here today.
Well, magnificent physical specimen or not, we still haven't trained me to not have to eat, huh?
Well, not yet, at any rate. All right, well, let's continue in the morning. Now, why don't we go get ready for dinner? That was a delicious dinner, Velda.
Oh, thank you, Max.
Yes, it was very good.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it, John.
And I'll make it unanimous. Excellent, Velda.
Thank you, Fred.
Would you care for an after-dinner drink, Fred? I know better than to ask Velda or John. Neither one of them touches the stuff. Mm-hmm. They're both utterly vice-free.
I figured that. As hard as Max has worked to get me well, the last thing I wanted to do was mess things up.
And as for me, I seem to have found an all-new reason to live.
A lust for life?
Very much so, John.
Well, I'm not one to let a man drink alone. Besides, I have some questions for you about the creation of the extreme symptoms during the experiments. Isn't there a certain amount of danger in that?
No. We're always very, very careful.
And in any case, the possibilities being what they are, I would consider almost any risk worth running.
I don't doubt that.
I'll leave you boys to talk shop then.
Yeah, I'd be glad to help you with the dishes, Velda.
I'd like that, John. And maybe afterwards we can take a walk. It's a lovely moonlit night.
It certainly is.
They seem very close.
Yes. Why don't we go into my study, Fred?
All right.
They're having an affair, Fred.
Are you certain?
Now, there's no need to spare my feelings. You picked up on it in an hour, and I've been with them together every day for 6 months now.
Well, then why do you permit it to go on?
I really try to be a scientist, and as a scientist, I had to admit to myself that the possible benefits from our experiments infinitely outweighed the hurt to my vanity or manhood. It may sound grotesque, but as a scientist, I even had to consider whether their dalliance wasn't necessary to keep my subject cooperative and in a proper state of mind. And maybe I would have to go even farther to make it work.
You realize how that sounds, don't you?
Yes, I realize how that sounds, Fred. But as it turned out, I didn't need to vary my routine at all in order to give them plenty of opportunities. Though I think that if it had been necessary, I might have done that.
Max.
So very much depends on these experiments of ours. And anyway, I feel differently about things now. Velda wasn't exactly the girl that I thought I was marrying. She has a tremendous need to be adored, a kind of cold lust for beauty and ecstasy, like some pagan princess. I married her, and I cooped her up here, and I tried to feed her on my enthusiasms, not her own. It's no wonder that she fell for John. Just look at him. So handsome, confident, so attentive to her every need. I all but threw them together without even realizing it.
You know, it's not too late to make things right with Velda.
No, but it is, Fred, it is. And that's for the best. I can honestly say that the only things that matter now are these experiments and Velda's happiness.
Well, if that's how you really feel, then I guess the only thing to do is keep at your work and live with the consequences.
Exactly. Exactly. And speaking of my work, I'd like you to sit in on our session tomorrow.
I'd like that.
Good. Good. Now, how about that drink I offered you? Good morning, Fred. Did you sleep well?
Yes, thank you. Is he hypnotized already?
He is.
And you've given him his instructions?
I have. I'm glad you're here, Fred, because today we are going to try something new. We are going to push onward to the ultimate test.
What instructions did you give him, Max?
You know that question that I asked you when you first arrived yesterday?
What instructions did you give him?
Just watch. Take his pulse.
He doesn't have one.
That mirror, hold it up to his lips and his nostrils.
Nothing. He's not breathing.
I told you I would show you something with a bearing on that question I asked you. What is death? Here you see death perfectly counterfeited. Death in life. And I would defy any doctor in the world to prove that this man is alive.
You instructed him to be dead?
Yes.
And he didn't know it ahead of time?
Oh, of course not. I explained why he can never know what we're going to simulate next.
I don't like this. Get him out of it.
No, not just yet.
Max, he's taking on a greenish tinge.
Not yet.
Now his limbs are beginning to stiffen. Rigor mortis is setting in. Max, bring him out of it. Oh, for God's sake, stop this. I don't know what you're trying to do, but you can't. Velda!
All right. Now just watch. See? The muscles are beginning to relax already.
There's no change, Max.
And clearly his color is returning to normal.
There's no change, Max.
I don't understand. Why isn't this working? Why isn't he reviving?
What's going on? I heard yelling. Oh my God, John! You killed him! You killed him!
Fred, get her out of here.
Murderer! Murderer! Murderer!
Velda?
Yes.
Velda, don't you know me? It's Fred. Fred Alexander.
Hi.
You better be getting upstairs, dear. It's time you took a little rest.
Oh, Max, what's happened to her?
Oh, we are so mysteriously fragile, Fred. Some slight change in the gland's function, some faint shadow falling across a knot of nerve tissue, and it's all over.
What are you saying, that she's...
In the 6 months since John's death, she's deteriorated quite rapidly. I don't think she has long to... Anyway, that's why I've asked you here, I need you to do something for me and for Velda.
Of course. What can I do?
She hates me, Fred. A murderous hatred for what I did to the man that she really loved.
But what can I do about that?
I recorded on tape every moment of my sessions with John, from our very first meeting until the... Listen, please, just go through them. Listen to them. Convince yourself to your very core that what happened to John Fearing was a tragic accident. And then maybe you'll be able to convince Velda that I'm not the cold-blooded killer she thinks I am.
Max.
I know. It's a lot to ask. There are hundreds of hours of tape. But I fear it's the only chance of getting Velda to let go of her hate and let go of John.
Max, she doesn't even recognize me.
Maybe it won't do a bit of good. But will you at least try? For friendship's sake?
All right. I'll get started immediately.
What is it, Fred?
Max, come on. I need you to listen to something.
It's the middle of the night, Fred. I can't wait till morning.
Now.
All right. Now, what is it that I need to listen to,
I've been going over your tape recordings like you asked. But what I found... I didn't notice it myself the first time through, but just listen. This is you giving Fearing his cues immediately before the fatal experiment.
You will revive when you hear this signal.
This is the last one.
Velda!
All right. Now just watch.
Fred, you needn't play that back to me. I hear that in my head every minute of every day.
But you're not hearing it. Listen again.
Now just watch.
Fred, why are you doing this to me? Did I not just tell you? I'll never forget that banging out signal over and over again, hoping against hope that he'd come out of it.
But that's just it. Oh, yes, you kept banging out the signal. But it was the wrong one.
What? What are you talking about? I must have given it 50 times. 3 and 2. 3 and 2. 3 and 2.
But you didn't. Listen to the tape.
Watch.
Listen, why don't you listen? We've gone through this 3 times now. And what for,
Max, don't you see what's happening here? Even now, your rational mind refuses to accept the truth. So it's making you hear 3 and 2. But that's not what's on the tape.
What are you saying?
Your clinical, conscious self claimed only to be interested in the research and Velda's happiness. But your subconscious mind, it wasn't so altruistic. It was jealous of John Fearing, even hated him.
No.
And so, when presented with the means and opportunity to dispose of this most despised rival, your subconscious took advantage of it.
No.
As a dedicated doctor, you used every means of reviving Fearing at your disposal. Injections, electrical stimulation, even direct heart massage. But nothing worked, because your subconscious was blocking you from using the only means of revival.
No!
Because no matter how hard or how often you gave that damnable signal, it didn't matter. Because you gave the wrong one.
God, I did kill him.
Or did you?
Velda! Fred, she's heard everything. She knows that I murdered John. There's no hope of ever getting her to forgive me now.
Max, don't you know where she's going?
What? You mean?
She's headed to Fearing's mausoleum.
Well, we have to stop her.
I have a flashlight in my car. I'll be right behind you. Fearing's tomb. Open. And Max. Strangled. By the rotting corpse of John Fearing.
So ends The Dead Man, by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by Fritz Lieber Jr. Tony Dow was Professor Max Redford. Peter Jessup was Fred Alexander. Camden Singer was Velda Redford. And Rick Fetterman was John Fearing. I'm your host, Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
The hardcore stuff is just is fast, very aggressive, and loud, you know, music, angry music.
I am your host, Mr. Steeston Mike. Welcome to the Flex Your Head Show on CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. I'm here every Tuesday.
6 to 8 p.m.
Playing some punk and hardcore for you. If you want to hear something, feel free to give me a call at 604-822-2487 or swing by flexyourhead.net and send us an email with a request.
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and that will be it this week for Skull Tall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of